first date in our calendar is 96-2190, City of Cleveland versus Stanley Kristakowski. Mr. Boston.
Good morning.
Please
report. Chief Justice Boyer, I represent the U.S. Supreme Court. My name is Ken Boston. I represent Stanley Kristakowski. My co-counsel is Robert Willis. We would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and Mr. Willis will address the rebuttal. In 1995, in March, Mr. Kristakowski was cited for violating the Cleveland City Ordinance 688.13 in allowing minors to frequent a billiard establishment in violation of the city ordinance.
To get a final appealable order in this court, does a lawyer have to go insist that the clerk actually stamp it and file it in these cases?
Well,
is that a real issue about the 30-day rule and Superintendent Rule 7 here?
Well, I don't think there's any question about the fact that our position is that if the clerk does not journalize his entry, then this case could have gone on, and this case could have been appealed 2 years after.
My question is that the way they normally proceed in that court?
I think that it is the way it normally proceeds in that court. Now, obviously, I can't prove it.
Okay, but there would never...
And it wasn't journalized until September 12th when they got the order to transmit it to the clerk.
So there would never be a final appealable order, obviously, until it's journalized.
Well, my experience is when the city wins the case, it gets journalized very quickly. And I've had cases where I filed for a suppress in the middle of the rule, and that journalization happens immediately. When the defendant wins the case, I find that journalization does not take place.
I was impressed by the procedural argument, and that's why I start with that. I understand you want to talk about pool halls, kids,
no, and that sort of thing. No, I was just going to talk about this issue because I think if this issue is determinative, then we don't have to talk about any other issue. There has to be some finality to cases in court.
Did you present a judgment to the court? I wonder, counsel, to see that it was journalized? Or
no, I don't think that.
Can't do it?
I don't think that that's the obligation.
It may not be, I would, but you said typically the state gets, city gets it journalized quickly, but defendants don't.
But it's not because they submit it. These are criminal cases,
yeah.
Criminal cases, the court renders an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That opinion is then journalized. If it was a civil case where a century was prepared by either the plaintiff or the defendant, then I would say that the obligation is on that party to make sure it's journalized. This is a court's order. It's the court's order and the court's opinion. And I would say that when the court makes an order and the opinion, it's incumbent on the court to make sure that it's journalized.
When I looked at the record, there was an entry prepared by the court dated 6/22. It did not have any attorney's name on it. It was decided that the mail was an attorney. It looked like just that secretary typed it, designed it, and put it in the file and nothing else happened. So, it was lost to the attorney.
I believe what happened in that case was he came out with his decision on the 22nd of June and indicated that, but prepared findings, facts, and conclusions of law, which were subsequently given to the parties on July the 26th of that year. But the journalization should still have been made based on June 22nd and June 23rd, because that's when the order came out. The court made the entry and notified the parties. I know that that's the case. But the court wrote an opinion.
That's exactly correct.
And we would be willing to agree that that's the distinction. If it's a civil case and we have a free entry or we prepare it, then I would say that it's our obligation to take it. But if the court makes the entry and then writes the opinion, we have no control over that. And in this particular case, not only did they wait until the entry was made in June, even arguing innuendo that they don't have to appeal it until after the findings of fact and conclusions of law come out, that was still an excess of 30 days. The opinion came out July 26th, it was appealed on August 20th. 28th. And in the meantime, the court still didn't July. It's still September 12th, so the Court of Appeals has to the record.
For purposes of our addressing the problem, we know you would agree. We know courts speak through their journal, through its journal, and in this instance, what date would you have be the date? I mean, you say it's not, it's too long, it wasn't journalized, but what date would you have this court use to start the running of the time for appeal?
I guess if we were to stretch it to the maximum, I would say 60 days.
And what?
60 days because the rule superintendent says it has to be journalized within 30. If you assume that you must appeal it within 30 days, I think you could, to an illogical conclusion, maybe say that they have 60 days to file an appeal.
And where would that be written?
Well, I don't think it is. I think that if you want to take a strict approach, the decision was June 22nd, you've got 30 days to file your appeal. But I guess if I was on the city side, I would argue that, well, it doesn't have to be journalized for 30 days, and the court speaks to its journal, so we really have 30 days from the date it's journalized. So in the maximum.
You could say, you would argue that you could say it was deemed journalized on the date it was required to be. Is that something like that?
If I was in the attorney of the county, I would say you've got 30 days to file an appeal.
You know why the entry, I'm looking at the defining of the fact that you're using the law. The judge's signature is June 23rd, but at the top it's typed like an extension that it stamps the generalization for itself. You know why the type date is different from the time date?
Because the decision was rendered on June 23rd. The findings of fact and conclusions of law were written and published on July 23rd. But the actual order was with June
23rd. So he put the date down to make the decision.
Right, and then he explained it in
the final fact. You know the decision because the judge gave it orally?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
He came out with his decision and said that the case is dismissed as violating equal protection, and there was no rational basis for it.
But this is that's how you knew what date and what happened was the court speaking.
That was an oral decision.
Because it's something that we have to be concerned with because we have to look at final appealable orders. To play devil's advocate for a moment, they wouldn't have a final appealable order to appeal then either.
That's correct.
So one of two sides has to be penalized if a decision is made procedurally in this case. Yeah, I understand that, but that's not in the record before us. All right, so what we look at right now is that we don't have a journal entry, we don't have a journalization within the 30 days.
That's right.
Aren't you then equally at disadvantage? Aren't both sides equally disadvantaged with regard to that? Actually, no, the state isn't because they don't want, or you're not because you don't want to appeal.
Well, we are disadvantaged because we have to worry from this constantly that this case may eventually be appealed. Had it not been appealed at all, it would not have been journalized.
Okay. Could the state have appealed it before they did?
Sure. They could appeal it 30 days after June 22nd when the court went through it.
But if there was not a journal entry, not a final appealable order, at best, their notice of appeal would have been premature.
The rule says that a premature appeal is considered final.
No. I don't think the rule says that. I haven't read it for a while, but I remember that what it says is that if the appeal, notice of appeal is premature, it can mature into a... Okay.
So they're not harmed at all by going out and appealing. They have all the time in the world. And we have this worry, what if it's a criminal case? And if the motion to suppress is granted, the case is dismissed.
Did the suppression here bring about a dismissal of the case?
Yes. Well, it was a motion to dismiss. That was a motion to dismiss based on equal protection.
Here were you seeking to suppress?
Well, we didn't. It wasn't a motion to suppress.
That's what I thought. You keep talking about a motion to suppress, but it was really a motion to dismiss based on equal protection, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah, I said, in our particular case, the city offered no evidence to show a rational case. We know that there was no liquor served, that this was exactly the same as a rec center, there were billiard tables, there were video games, all the things served was pop and pretzels. And hot dogs, that there was no distinction between the rec center for the city of Cleveland and the Mr. Turkowski's business. His business was not for adults. If it was for adults, it would serve alcohol. Adults didn't come into his establishment. When I say adults, I'm talking over 21 because there's a distinction between 18 and 21. But when this law was passed in 1966, Ohio had 3-2 beer. The people between 18 and 21 could drink.
Under this ordinance, if you have a bowling alley, and many bowling alleys have a billiard area connected to them, and you take your kids to go bowling, and they wander into the pool area, is that a violation of this ordinance?
It says billiards or billiard hall. I would say that it probably could be, but the fact that I think most bowling alleys would drink.
Yeah, I know. But even then, I mean...
I think it could be enforced. But this is in River City. You know, if you just imagine that River City is in trouble and pee, running pee, and that's the end of the pool, and I don't believe that that's the case anymore. I just don't. This is a man who put together a rec center. He called it a billiard hall, but it was a rec center. And it was for kids. It was for young adults and teens. No alcohol. He made it available for the kids. He's since gone out of business because he has no business. If you can't have people under 18, and the people who are over 21 go to the billiard hall so they can drink, there's no business for this gentleman. But the city offered no evidence whatsoever. That's all they said was we want to protect the kids. Well, protect the kids from what? No alcohol, very few adults. This was a rec center. What's the purpose? We believe that Dallas was interpreted incorrectly. Well, Dallas was interpreted correctly by the Court of Appeals, but they assumed fact, not in evidence. They assumed the fact that there was an adulteration, that it was a perception of too much. But there was no evidence of that. The trial court, Judge Smith, indicated, and he said specifically, in this case, there was no such evidence, but merely conclusory statements by the plaintiff's city. So even if you assume that the Court of Appeals was correct in using they should have upheld the trial court. They assume, again, that this is really good. We don't believe that's the case. We don't believe there was any evidence, either to the trial level or the Court of Appeals level, to warrant that finding. I know that the court has addressed this very recently, the American Association of University Professors. And I think that case is to that. Well, also, I obviously believe that there was a rational basis, and that we showed that at the trial court level by showing the statements presented to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Cole.
Thank you, Chief. May it please the court, my name is Jay Cole. I'm the assistant prosecutor with the city of Cleveland. And this is Ruben Shepard, the first assistant prosecutor for the city of Cleveland. Together, we represent the athlete in this case, the city of Cleveland. Your Honor, this court should uphold the findings of the Gates District Court of Appeals and remand this case back to the trial court for a trial on the merits. Because the Cleveland Municipal Ordinance 688.13 is constitutional under the 1st and 14th Amendment. It does not violate equal protection clauses under the 14th Amendment, and it does not violate the overrides under the 1st Amendment. The right of association is not a fundamental right in this case.
I'd like to hear your argument on the procedural issue here.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think that, to me, that's the most important issue in the case. Your argument in your brief is simply that the defendant here should have submitted a journal entry. This is a fairly common practice, isn't that, in municipal court?
The contention by the appellant that the court's office in some way holds journal entries and does not journalize them is not a policy or practice in the Cleveland Municipal Court.
The judges told them not send them to the court's office to journalize.
That may be well what happened in this case. But it's still the city of Cleveland's position that the appeal was timely filed, the journal entry was signed in on September 12th. Now, when the judge gave his ruling for that...
That was because there was a request for the record. The judge said it hadn't been done on their own, had it?
The record is not there as to why it's going to take on that. They only did that once a day, but it wasn't that time.
Would you agree that if indeed the procedure is, as Mr. Billington says it is, the standard procedure, would you agree that that's not a very good procedure for the court to be using?
Your Honor, if that were a standard procedure, it would be a bad procedure to have, and it would not be in line with the rules and regulations of the superintendent of the court. However, that is not the policy and procedure of the municipal court, and there's no evidence before you today except for counsel's allegations that it is, in fact, the policy and procedure. In this particular case at hand, the trial court gave an oral decision on June 23rd, 1995, but it also stated that it's going to submit findings and conclusions of law. It was, in other words, was saying that there is going to be a subsequent journal entry, a subsequent filing by the court, and therefore, in ruling by this court, that subsequent journal entry would be the one that would actually start the time had the findings and conclusions of law been timestamped on July 26th.
Does the prosecutor's office, do you, when you win a case in municipal court in Tyler County, do you prepare a journal entry and file it with the court?
No,
that's not the practice generally.
No, it's not.
The practice is that Mr. Boson says to us, or something else?
The practice generally is that the court does it on its own and the clerk's office does it on its own. We do not usually prepare a journal entry. But we do check to see that they're done. And in this case, Your Honor, the city waited 30 days for the court to journalize that findings of fact and conclusions of law from July 26th. And on the very next day, the 31st day after that was not done, we filed our notice of appeal to protect our right to appeal. We did that on the 31st day after August 28th, 1995, because the 31st day was following on the weekend, therefore the 31st day was following Monday. And we did that to protect our right. I would concede to this court that there should have been a more timely process of generalization of this case. However, in any case whatsoever, The court should not penalize the parties that matter involved in the case because of this type of error that the court or the court's office commits. It is not reasonable to take away the right of appeal from the parties when the court or the court is at fault for not journalizing the entry. The parties are at the mercy of the court at that point. The proper remedy for the parties would be to file a civil writ of mandamus and to have the court prepare and have that journal entry put into the record.
That's a fairly, this court, that's a fairly burdensome process. And then file mandamus to get a judge to file a journal entry every time, and with the number of cases that go through this court, I mean, technically you're right, but gosh, what a procedure.
Well, Your Honor, that's the procedure that this court, in fact, has said is the one that is available to the parties when the court fails in its duty in this regard. I would agree with you that that's not a remedy that the parties would prefer to take. In fact, the city of Cleveland did not take that remedy. We instead opted to file a notice of opinion on our notice of appeal on the third court today, and the court of appeal told us we filed that prematurely, but that it didn't mature properly when we rather was sent to it. Because of those reasons, we believe that the journal entry was contact on September 12th, and that we filed our journalization timely in this matter, they should not be penalized for the court's failure. I would remind the court that those superintendents rules not only apply in criminal cases, but also in civil cases, and it does not seem reasonable that other parties should be penalized for this type of action by the court. Furthermore, the majority of criminal cases that come out is going to be the defendants that would benefit from the additional time and not the city or the state.
If the parties are not, you make a persuasive argument to not penalize the parties. If this is a practice in municipal court, and we say, well, it's not a proper practice, but we don't want to penalize the parties, how do we get the message to the judges that they should do what's right? And that is to journalize their entries within a reasonable period of time, rather than leaving the case open in limbo for months.
Your Honor, the rules of superintendents are rules between the Supreme Court and the judges of the state of Ohio. Those rules do not involve the parties themselves, per se. And it would seem that better education to the judges, perhaps additional clarification in the rules that is incumbent upon the judges not to perhaps hold case files in their office and send them down when they feel like it. And we actually agree that that's what happened in this particular case. As I said, it is not the policy of the court's office to hold journals and we can journalize them at a much later time. They expect to journalize them the same day or the very next day. And that is, in fact, the policy in our court's office. Your Honor, Cleveland Municipal Code 688.13 was passed by the legislature for one reason only, to protect the interest, to protect the health, the safety of our children. The City Council believes that pool halls were a bad environment for minors to be in, that pool halls were designed specifically to adults in mind. There are pool halls that have alcohol. There are pool halls that have access to tobacco products.
Did this pool hall have alcohol or access to
tobacco? Your Honor, this pool hall did not have alcohol. However, the
city
around
is true that the municipality operates
Yes, it is, Your Honor. The city rec center also provides supervision, adult supervision, to the children that play there. And that is far underneath the exceptions of the statute.
And this particular hall did not have adult supervision?
No, it did not, Your Honor. It only has the person that was operating the facility in this case, the appellant. And I would point out to the children, he was an adult, but he was there to operate the facility and not supervise the children and not to be there for their security or to be there for their control. He was there to operate a business and to make money.
Your brief seems to argue that because they charge money for this,
one of the criteria, Your Honor, and the brief we were trying to point out.
Okay, how would that differ from video on tape. What the kid can go in and run a video.
There are video arcades that are now environments that are designed for adult entertainment. They do not, in most cases, provide alcohol or tobacco products, and it is a more wholesome environment for the children. I would point out to this court that in this very case before you, these five children were found in this establishment at 11:45 on a Sunday night, well past the time of curfew and past the time that the establishment should have been open. They provided a haven for these five children to violate the curfew law. These are exactly the types of things that the city is trying to prevent from protecting our children and looking out for the future of our community.
Do you present any evidence, any statistics, any studies that differentiate between the two types of restaurants and the
people? No, Your Honor, we did not. I was not the attorney at the time, and I do not believe that the court held me the evidentiary hearing. I believe there was only oral argument on the issue.
If you're attacked by a
Counselor, I'm going to ask the same question if the chief gives counsel a chance to for any rebuttal. I'm going to ask them the same question, but I'm sitting here again worrying about the procedural matter. You say you want us to affirm and send this back for trial.
Yes,
sir. We affirm it's over, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. The trial court threw the case out before it went to trial.
Understand.
The public court overruled that. So we'll go back to the trial court for trial on the merits.
On the merits what? The constitutionality has been decided. If we affirm...
The defendant has not yet been tried on the actual case, Your Honor.
You mean whether or not there were five people? They're going to stipulate there were five people in there, five minors in there.
People still have to go back and say it's justice.
Now we're at justice. I see. But practically then, let me use the word practically. Isn't the case over? I mean, the only issue is equal protection, other than the procedural issue. So if we reverse on the procedural issue, then they're no better off because the case is still, because the statute is still constitutional. It would be res judicata. All right. If we affirm, they're still in that position.
If this court affirms all three propositions involving the court, the case should be remanded for trial. It is clear that the ordinance was designed by the city to protect the children. The children are the future of the community, and the law is designed to protect their safety and their health, and therefore protecting the general welfare and the future of our community. 688.13 is constitutional in the first and working amendment in the city file government. I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Cole. Mr. Bolton, you've used your time, but Mr. Willis will take 30 seconds.
Mr. Willis, if we affirm, in this case over, practically speaking?
For practical standpoint, I would agree.
Okay. If we reverse on the procedure, are you any better off?
My client is better off because my client is capable. If you reverse on the procedure, then it wasn't filed in time.
Yeah, I understand on the criminal penalty your client's case is over, but Mr. Blossom says he's out of business. He's got no business. He still doesn't have any business if we reverse on procedure, does he?
No, the law would still be in effect, and we would have to abide by the law.
Right.
We would, of course, your question after the client in this case, that you reverse on the procedural issue, but for the benefit of the business and other people who want to go into the business, you just have legal protection around if you reverse on the constitutional basis.
Well, but if we can decide the case on a procedural basis, the maximum, of course, is we never get to the constitutional issue if you can decide it on the procedure. Isn't that right?
That would be correct, Your Honor.
And the merits of this case are a constitutional issue, equal protection.
In which case, we may be back here at some point in time on the same issue based on the constitutional issue, and all about the procedural aspect of muddy waters.
You wouldn't want us to write any dicta, would you, in this case? You wouldn't want us to write any dicta in this case,
or advisory.
You may be back. That's correct. To answer a question brought up by Justice Sussman earlier, is who should be disadvantaged on the procedural aspect of it? And I would argue that it would be the city that should be disadvantaged. The city knew in June of 1995 that they had lost. They knew that Judge Smith decided to go ahead and dismiss Randy. It's not really that they're going to be disadvantaged. That's the way it is. We all have to keep track of time and also lock our own calendars. And it's incumbent upon counsel to keep track of that. The fact that the court didn't journalize it shouldn't be allowed to benefit the city. That would be the flip side of Justice Butler's question is, who benefits from the lack of data point of view of the judges and the court? And of course, the city of this case benefited from that lack of data point of view. While it may not be policy to not be generalized, it is in fact practice for that court to do that. The tax court appeal was not the date of the opinion. It was not the writing of the facts, but the date of the opinion. So it was run from June of 1995 as opposed to when Judge Trump on why he ruled that way.
You've used your time, Mr. Willis.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.